Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Yakima Henry by Frank Leslie. Narrated by Terrence Aselford, with performances by Thomas Keegan, Colleen Delaney, Lily Beacon, David Jordan, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, David Coyne, Tim Getman, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, James Lewis, David Harris, Bradley Smith, Drew Copus, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Gary Tells, Michael John Casey, James Konacek, Nanette Savard, Yasmin Toison, Kimberly Gilbert, Elizabeth Jernigan, Eva Wilhelm, Richard Rowan, Sherry Berg, Laura C. Harris, and Mort Shelby. Yakima Henry Number 1, The Lonely Breed. Yakima Henry smelled the sweet plum aroma of a familiar perfume wafting on the night breeze.
Yakima?
He glanced over his shoulder at the scantily clad doxy standing at the edge of the porch. He himself stood at the edge of the roadhouse's front yard, partially hidden by a spindly cedar.
Yes, ma'am?
Would you do me a favor?
What's that, ma'am?
I was wondering if you... Hey, what are you doing out there anyways?
I beg your pardon, Miss Sabrina. I'm taking a piss.
How uncouth. Why don't you use the privy?
Yakima shook himself, tucked himself into his fringed buckskin breeches, and buttoned his fly.
Privy's off limits to breeds.
He picked up the firewood he'd gathered from the shed and headed back to the porch, and the smell of tobacco smoke and liquor tinged with the fragrance of the horse perfume. Sabrina frowned down at him, brown ringlets framing her face.
You can't piss where everybody else pisses? That's rotten.
Her willowy figure in a low-cut cream dress, hair, feathers, and several cheap necklaces, was silhouetted against the roadhouse's two front windows.
This is the best job I've had in 2 years. I'm not gonna start complaining about where I piss.
He works you like a slave.
I've worked harder, and for a lot less than what Thornton pays me. Now, what can I do for you?
She tipped her head toward the bat wings.
Me and one of the soldier boys broke my bed. Think you can fix it? It's early. If my bed was fixed, I could get 3 more customer service before closing time. You know Thornton's quotas.
The headboard or the frame?
A leg broke.
I'll get on as soon as I fill the wood box.
She smiled, looked around, and pivoting coquettishly on one bare foot, screwed a finger into her chin.
Thanks. I'll give you a free poke sometime. When Thornton's not around.
You lay with a breed?
Don't tell anyone, but I've laid with plenty of breeds. Last whorehouse I worked was around Belle Fouche.
She ran her eyes across Yakima's broad, muscular chest, his thick brown hands curled under the split logs in his arms. Having watched him working with his shirt off, she knew his belly was flat and hard as oak, his shoulders stout as wheel hubs, his waist not much bigger around than her own. His legs, slightly bowed, were turned with hard, long muscles straining his buckskin seams. She returned her glittering eyes to his face with its broad, flat cheekbones. His dark skin was marked from nicks received in knife fights, and his lustrous hazel eyes were framed by long, dark brown hair. He smelled of leather, tobacco, sage, horses, and something else, which she imagined to be the smell of wild things in remote, far-flung, lonely places. The smells of the wilderness. Sabrina felt a warming, tingling sensation deep in her belly. He'd no doubt be quite the lover, this taciturn half-savage, thrusting between her legs, his fierce heart pounding like a tom-tom. She'd bet aces to eights she wouldn't have to fake satisfaction for a change. Flushing, she nibbled a fingernail and turned slowly and slipped back into the bar. Yakima waited a moment and then went inside. He threaded his way through the bullwhackers, miners, and drifters, most of whom were camped overnight in the field behind Thornton's barn. He headed toward the wood box at the room's rear. Too late, he saw the hobnailed boot thrust out from a chair to his left. His own left boot clipped it. Tensing his jaw, feeling his face burn, Yakima glanced over his left shoulder. A snaggletooth bullwhacker wearing a battered derby and a greasy cravat was looking at him. Stupid breed! Pick those up! Goddamn half-breeds never could walk a straight line! Yakima's heart thudded. Staring up at the snaggletooth gent, feeling the veins in his forehead bulge, he set his right hand down on a stove-length chunk of cottonwood. His fingers curled around the log, tightened till his knuckles nearly popped through the skin. He began lifting the wood.
I wouldn't do that, breed.
Yakima turned his head slightly. From the corner of his right eye, he saw a tall, bearded, blood-stained man wearing a ratty sombrero and three big revolvers and toting a shotgun and a saddle boot. At the moment, he was aiming a long-barreled Remington at Yakima's right ear. Yakima's gaze fell on his stocky boss, Thornton, clad in the customary checked suit and bowler, bushy sideburns framing his long, raptorial face. Staring at Yakima, Thornton shook his head and slid his gaze to the man who'd tripped him.
Pardew, leave the breed alone, will you? I don't pay him 50 cents a day to crawl around on the floor like a damn cripple.
Bardool glanced at Thornton. He flushed, wiped his hand across his mouth, and turned back toward the table and his fan of pasteboards and quarter-full whiskey glass.
Just reminding the breed of his station.
Yakima heard the hammer ease down against the firing pin and released his grip on the cottonwood log. He turned to see the big bounty hunter slip the revolver into a shoulder holster hanging loose beneath his duster.
You heard your boss, breed. Get to work!
The man smiled, showing two tobacco-stained silver front teeth. A strawberry-shaped birthmark darkened the skin just to the right of his nose.
Otherwise, I might have to look through my wanted dodgers. I bet I'll find your big heathen face staring out at me. $500-$600 worth, no doubt.
One of the girls, known as Kansas Jen, threw her arms around the bounty hunter's thick neck.
Oh, come on, Whit. Leave that man alone and buy me a drink. I'm thirsty.
Like I said, breed, get to work.
He leveled a hard glance at Yakima, then ushered Kansas Jen toward the bar.
More whiskey!
Yakima glanced again at Thornton, who stood surveying the room from beside the piano, his eyes hard and quick and roomy from drink. The roadhouse owner patted the piano player, a one-time ranch cook named Cisco Squires, to get him playing again, and gave Yakima a brusque nod toward the wood box. He jutted a long finger at the ceiling.
When you're done there, hustle two bottles of rye whiskey upstairs, room 3.
Balancing the wood in his arms, Yakima continued his serpentine journey to the back of the room, warily watching the floor, finally making his way to the wood box. He went to the left end of the bar, where two rye bottles were waiting for him. He grabbed the bottles, retrieved his toolbox from the storage room next to the back bar, and headed upstairs. He delivered the rye to room 3, and then walked to Sabrina's door. He paused. The door was half open. Sabrina was sitting atop her dresser, wearing only her necklaces, while a sandy-haired drifter, his pants and underwear bunched around his jackboots, thrust his hips between her spread knees. Sabrina saw Yakima as he came through the door, but didn't bother to interrupt the drifter.
Oh! Oh!
She winked over the drifter's right shoulder and flicked a hand toward the damaged bed. The half-breed crossed the room and inspected the broken leg while he fished out a few tools.
Oh, yeah. Get your money's worth now.
The drifter and Yakima hammered away at their respective tasks until both were finished. Yakima was done driving a nail through the leg and wrapping it with rawhide at about the same time the drifter was settling up with Sabrina.
Good night, Miss Sabrina.
Bye, darling. Stop by the next time you drift through. Maybe then we can try the bed instead of riding the dresser.
Whichever one's fine for me.
I thank you, Yakima, for fixing up the leg of the bed. Remember, next time Thornton's not around, I'll give you a little something for free as payment.
Yakima left Sabrina's room and was heading down the stairs when the blonde whore known as Faith met him on the steps. Of Thornton's 8 girls, Yakima felt closest to Faith, as she often smuggled him steaks from the kitchen and had once doctored a festering cut he'd received while working at the blacksmith's anvil. The lithe, high-busted blonde was pulling a stocky gent along behind her, holding her pink, clingy robe closed with her free hand. She gave Yakima a wan, conspiratorial smile and continued her graceful ascent of the creaky staircase, the stocky gent behind her staring wide-eyed at the movements of her ass as she climbed the stairs.
Damn! It's been pure D 2 months since my last mattress dance.
Well, you're due then, aren't you?
Stepping aside to let the two pass, Yakima followed their progress toward the top of the stairs. The man with Faith peered across the main room of the saloon. He nodded as if to signal someone, then continued to follow Faith down the hall. Yakima shifted his own gaze to the saloon's main floor. Sure enough, 3 men were making a beeline for the stairs, moving fast. They were big, dusty, hard-eyed men. One wore bandoliers crossed on his chest, a big bone-handled buoy and a sheath under his left arm. They passed Yakima on the stairs.
Move, Breed.
They all stank of horse shit, old sweat, whiskey. Yakima looked around the room for Thornton. The roadhouse proprietor and most notorious pimp on the front range was helping the 2 bartenders splash drinks into glasses. He was too busy to notice the 3 men bounding up the stairs on their own. No one was allowed upstairs without the company of a girl, 1 girl to each man, unless otherwise arranged with Thornton. Yakima was grabbed by the collar and jerked back violently, twisting him around.
Listen, Breed. You stay away from the second floor for a while.
He prodded Yakima's side with his knife point. It felt like a bee sting. Yakima's gut tightened against it.
No half-breeds allowed. Listen, you want to be sent off to the happy hunting ground with a belly full of buoy. Comprende?
The man turned and, slipping the knife into its sheath, climbed the stairs.
Breed!
Yakima turned toward the bar, before which the thirsty customers crowded 4 deep, waving greenbacks. Thornton stood behind the rough pine counter, a bottle in his hand, glaring up at him.
If you got nothing better to do than stand on the stairs with your thumb up your ass, get outside and help the hostlers with the stage that just pulled in. After that, clear tables. We're running out of glasses.
Yakima pointed to the second story to indicate the 4 men who'd gone upstairs with Faith, but Thornton had already resumed slopping booze. Yakima glanced back up the stairs and continued on down. He could muscle his way up to Thornton, but that would take several minutes, and Thornton had a habit of not listening to what he didn't want to hear anyway. Yakima returned the toolbox to the storage room, then pushed through the crowd and stepped outside. The idea of Faith upstairs with 4 men, 3 of whom she obviously hadn't been expecting, gnawed at Yakima's gut. He stopped and stared out at the stagecoach, before which several passengers stood, dusting themselves off. He wheeled suddenly and headed around to the back of the roadhouse. He took the back stairs 2 steps at a time. He stepped into the hall lit by red hurricane lamps in which candles smoked and guttered. Yakima moved to the far end and paused to listen at the door to room 9.
I tell you, she was the best looking whore in the territory. She used to work for Crazy Kate over at Fort Dodge.
We're in for a real treat here tonight, boys.
Now, we've got rules here. You boys aren't supposed to...
I told you to shut up, bitch.
Yakima bent down, raised his buckskin cuff above his right boot, and removed his Arkansas toothpick. 6 inches of ugly double-edged steel, bone-handled and boasting a brass hilt. He stepped into the nearly dark room. On the dresser to his left, a single candle offered the only light. Before him, Faith lay naked on the floor. One of the 4 men knelt between her spread legs, his back to Yakima. The man's cartridge belt was coiled on the floor beside him, and he was fumbling with his fly buttons. Two of the other three were kneeling on either side of Faith, pinning her down, one holding his hand across her mouth. The fourth, the red-faced hombre who'd stopped Yakima on the stairs, stood before her. He had his boots and pants off and was about to remove his shirt. Looking up, he saw Yakima and his eyes snapped fire.
Told you to make yourself scarce, Injun.
Step out, Breed. Thornton owes us for an overdue freight note. We're just settling the debt.
Yakima stayed where he was and pushed the door closed without turning around. He held his toothpick down low at his side.
I don't think the girl much cares for the way you're settling Thornton's bill.
The man kneeling between Faith's legs stared furiously up at Yakima and inched his hand toward his cartridge belt.
If you like that hand, keep it where it is.
Careful, horsehead. These breeds know how to wield a pigskin.
He jerked his hand from Faith's biting mouth.
Bitch bit me!
Faith's eye found Yakima's.
Get Thornton and Willie!
Willie was the hard case Thornton hired to ride shotgun on the saloon, and the girls and anyone else in Thornton's employ. The red-faced man standing over Faith's head stared at Yakima.
Now, let's not get hasty. Tell you what, Breed. If you just sit over there in the corner, quiet as a mouse, we'll let you have her when we're done. How'd that be?
Yakima held his stare with a dark one of his own.
Get out.
That ain't sporting.
The red-faced hombre, with a devilish grin, slowly turned toward the bed and his weaponry.
You got one knife. We all got guns.
I'll tell you one more time. Get out.
Yakima, don't!
Faith glanced fearfully up at the men kneeling and standing around her. The one-eyed man squatting at Faith's left shoulder slowly straightened and stepped back. His right arm moved suddenly. Yakima couldn't see it because the man called Horsehead obscured his view, but the one-eye was obviously grabbing the six-shooter from his low-slung holster. Yakima shot his left hand out, throwing Horsehead into one-eye. The red-faced man dove for one of his three guns nestled among the leather atop the bed. In a blur of motion, Yakima tossed the toothpick end over end. As the red-faced man hit the bed and rolled to his right, bringing up a short-barreled Schofield in his right fist, the toothpick sunk into the middle of his upper chest, 6 inches below his throat. The man threw his head back, his shot going wild. The man to the right of Faith bolted up and forward, launching his head and shoulder toward Yakima. Yakima turned at the last second, grabbed the man's collar, and pivoting, rammed his head into the room's closed door. As the man fell straight down, Yakima saw Horsehead pushing himself up to his feet and grabbing the cross-draw revolver on his left hip. Yakima leaped 3 feet in the air, throwing his arms out, pivoting and bringing his left foot up and to the right. He slammed his heel savagely against the man's left jaw. Watching one eye in the corner of his vision, Yakima leaped off his left foot and brought his right heel against the silvery flash of a pistol.
Ah, damn it!
The gun flew against the wall, cracking the plaster. Yakima slammed both feet to the floor and faced the hard case.
You fucking half-breed son of a bitch!
Yakima brought his right foot up and rammed it squarely into the man's groin. The man twisted around and fell hard on his side, clutching his privates. Yakima glanced around. Faith was sitting against the far wall near the end of the bed, knees to her chest, mouth gaping. All four hard cases were out of commission. The one on the bed, with the knife through his chest, didn't appear to be breathing. Neither did the one by the door, whose neck was bent at a strange angle.
Oh, shit.
The one whose jaw Yakima had smashed was kneeling in the corner like a naughty schoolboy being punished, his head down, shaking like a leaf in a spring blizzard. Yakima reached down, removed two more pistols and a knife from a sheath on the man's cartridge belt. He dropped the weapons on the floor and kicked them under the bed.
What the hell's going on up there?
Yakima, you have to get out of here now. These men have friends downstairs. Bad hombres.
Yakima moved to the bed, pulled his knife out of the dead man's chest, and wiped the blood on the man's long underwear. The door burst open, nudging aside the man with the broken neck. In stepped Thornton, holding a pepper box revolver in his beringed right hand. The house bouncer, big, wall-eyed hombre known as Willie, bolted in behind him, stepping to Thornton's left and swinging his sawed-off shotgun around the room. Several men and two girls stood in the hall behind them, peering in. Thornton's eyes settled on Yakima.
Jesus Christ! What the hell's going on in here?
They all tried to take me, Bill. Only one I paid. They said they were gonna mark me when they were done, as a message to you about a debt.
Fuckers. They thought I underpaid them for the last freight run they made for me. Breed, thought I told you to help with the stage.
I saw these boys follow Faith up the stairs.
That's what Willie's for.
I didn't see Willie.
A man muscled between Thornton and Willie. A short blonde kid in a bowler hat, chaps, suspenders, and a threadbare underwear shirt.
Christ almighty.
Get out of here, Bilk!
The half-breed done this?
You heard the man. Get out of here.
Willie turned and shouldered Bilk out of the room. Thornton turned his angry, sweat-glistening face to Yakima.
You too, Breed. Clear out.
Faith pushed her back to the wall and slowly gained her feet.
He saved my hide, Bill. It ain't fair to kick him out.
He's trouble. You heard me, Breed.
Yakima held out his left hand, keeping the toothpick in his right.
I'll be drawing my time.
Thornton glared at him, his face flushing. Finally, he reached into his jacket, produced a wallet, and withdrew several bills. He slapped the money into Yakima's hand.
Here. Don't let me catch your troublemaking hide in these parts again, Breed. Unless you want it perforated with Willie's double-aught buck.
Yakima glanced over his left shoulder. Willie aimed the barn blaster at him, grinning. The shotgun's hammers were cocked. Yakima stuffed the folded bills into a pocket, shoved past Willie, and moved to the door. He paused, glanced at Faith, who stared at him sadly, brows furrowed, the corners of her mouth turned down.
What happened?
Yakima pushed through the onlookers and made his way down the hall toward the stairs. The crowd consisted of several girls and their customers in various stages of undress. He lifted his boot, slid the knife inside, then continued down the hall and descended the stairs two steps at a time.
Another job shot to hell. 8 weeks working here and I've got $12 in my name.
Halfway down the stairs, he stopped. Under the cloud of webbing tobacco smoke, the main hall had gone quiet as Easter morning. The men and a few girls stared at him from tables or their positions at the bar. Even the piano player had turned to regard him over the right shoulder of his soiled brown suit coat. A few men in the back corner to his right, near the smoky wood stove, were conversing in low tones. One of them stood, a spidery gent with coal black hair and a ragged slouch hat shoved back on his head. He swept both flaps of his antelope jacket back, revealing the smooth walnut butts of two Colt revolvers positioned for the cross draw. Staring over the railing, Yakima turned the corners of his mouth up.
Damn. Why didn't I take the outside stairs?
After a lifetime of trouble, you'd think Yakima would have gotten better at avoiding it. The man on the floor slowly, deliberately drew both guns, his jaw tight, his angry eyes fixed on Yakima.
Had you a little party up there, did you, Breed? According to Marty Bilk, the rock worshiper did a little sharp blade work on Smith, Sneed, Dallemeyer, and Horsehead.
Horsehead? Well, that's my brother-in-law.
Was your brother-in-law, according to Bilk. All four of them were my business partners.
Trick Dallemeyer's my half-brother, Redskin.
The man in the slouch hat stared down his extended pistol barrels at Yakima.
I'm thinking it's time to invite this Breed to a necktie party.
Yakima glanced around the room. More men were rising from their tables and drawing their guns, several moving toward the stairs.
Forget the rope. I'm gonna ventilate the son of a savage bitch where he stands, goddammit!
Yakima hoisted himself over the railing. The shooter's revolver popped, the slug slicing the air where Yakima's head had been a quarter second before and plunking into a step. Yakima dropped straight down, both feet smashing into a baize-covered table. As Yakima's boots ran through the table, the four men who'd been sitting there drinking and playing cards leapt to their feet. In the corner of his eye as he jumped off the falling table, Yakima saw one of the shooters slug face the head of one of the gamblers. Yakima hit the floor on his feet, took two running strides, and leapt onto another table. He sprang left and forward, bouncing off another table to his right, sprang again, and headed for the faro layout behind a square-hewn support post.
Hold the damn fire! You're shooting up a place!
Get that goddamn half-breed!
Yakima took two more quick strides and dove. He landed on the porch in a hail of glass and lead and rolled off his shoulder. He bounded out to where a half dozen horses were tied at the three hitch racks fronting the roadhouse, the others having jerked loose at the sound of the gunfire. Yakima ripped a piebald's reins from a rack and jerked the animal onto the wagon trail. He aimed the horse westward and swung into the leather. Yakima ground his heels into the pie's ribs.
Go, horse!
The pie lunged off its rear hooves and, well before reaching the edge of the yard, stretched its stride into a gallop. Yakima followed the trail's northward curve and kept his head down as the roadhouse yard and lights faded. In less than a minute, he was winding into the foothills, shrubs and boulders stippling the hogbacks around him. Then the black columns of pines and Douglas firs pushed up along both sides of the steeply climbing trail, and the horse began to blow. Ahead, the trail forked. He took the right fork and descended into a hollow. At the bottom, the trail leveled out, and the pie regained its wind. Yakima followed the meandering path for several minutes, then halted the horse. He turned his head back the way he'd come, listening.
Damn it.
Yakima kneed the pie into motion. 5 minutes later, he'd followed another side trail out of the hollow and onto a flat. Hearing only one set of hooves closing in on him from behind, the second rider must have taken the other fork, Yakima urged the pie into a shambling, half-hearted gallop.
Come on, damn it!
No matter how much urging and coaxing he did, the horse's pace remained plodding, frustratingly slow. He glanced over his right shoulder. The rider was 50 yards behind, a bobbing silhouette against the star-flecked sky. He urged the pie forward down a slope in the rippling prairie when the pie suddenly fell out from beneath him. Yakima's momentum threw him over the horse's head. He hit the ground on his back. The ground pitched to either side, and his ears rang. Groggily, he rose to his elbows. The horse lay 6 feet away on its side, head turned at an odd angle, its neck broken. Its right front hoof had plundered a gopher hole. On the sand and dirt that the hoof had ripped out of the ground, as the horse's momentum had propelled it forward, the leg lay Y-shaped, bone exposed, blood glistening. The sound drew Yakima's eyes to his back trail. The dark shape of a horse and rider grew. The man hunkered low over his horse's neck, extending a pistol straight out from the horse's right shoulder. Starlight winked off the barrel. Yakima flinched and scrambled onto his haunches. As the rider neared, extending his revolver at Yakima's head, the half-breed ducked. The horse and rider continued past Yakima in a rush of wind and sifting dust, the ground vibrating beneath the pounding hooves. As the rider pulled back on the reins, Yakima bolted to the dead horse. It had fallen on its rifle boot, and he could see the rifle stock sticking up in front of the hip. Wrapping both hands around the stock, he glanced behind him. The rider was turning his horse toward Yakima. Yakima dug his boot heels into the prairie side and gave the stock a hard tug. The bullet seared through his right arm. He gave the rifle another hard jerk. This time, it popped free of the sheath. Yakima swung around, falling back against the horse. The rider thundered toward Yakima and extended the revolver again.
Stinking goddamn savage!
The man's horse continued on past Yakima, nickering, skitter-stepping sideways. He started to lever fresh brass into the breech when he realized he'd fired his last shot. The rifle was empty. He looked at the rider. The man stared back at Yakima, the darkness obscuring the expression on his face. The pistol dropped from his hand. The man sagged slowly in his saddle and disappeared down the opposite side of his horse. The horse wheeled and ran. Yakima tossed away the Winchester. Clutched the bloody wound halfway between his shoulder and elbow. Pain seared through him, lanced up and down his arm and through his chest. He looked down at the rider, who lay with his arms and one leg splayed, the other leg curled beneath his body. Blood gleamed low on his chest. The pistol lay in a tuft of bunch grass. Yakima picked up the gun and turned it so he could see the back end of the cylinder.
Only one shell left.
He cast a wary gaze back the way he and the dead man had ridden. He couldn't see anything, but judging by the sounds, the others had heard the shooting and were heading toward him. He turned around. The bench was flat and sparsely stippled with bunch grass and sage, occasional pockets of chokecherry. To the east, the direction he'd been heading when he'd lost the pie, the rim rock rose on the other side of a brushy swale. A man could hide in the rocks at the top of that butte. Wedging the pistol in the waistband of his buckskin breeches, Yakima turned to the dead man. He crouched, jerked off the man's neckerchief, and quickly wrapped it around the bullet wound. tying it one-handed. Pulling the knot tight, Yakima ran toward the butte. He didn't sprint, but held himself to a jog, not wanting to spend himself before he reached the butte's base, 2 miles away. The night turned around him, the ground rising and falling like a pitch-black storm-churned sea. He was growing dizzy from the pain and the blood loss. He threw a quick glance over his shoulder. 5 riders galloped toward him. Yakima stumbled and continued running, keeping his gaze locked on the black anvil-shaped rim rock looming before him, seemingly the same distance away as when he'd started running. Sweat dribbled down from his forehead and into his eyes, obscuring his vision. It runneled the dust on his cheeks, soaked his back and chest. His shirt flapped like a wet sheet. A bullet clipped his boot heel. It threw his stride off. He fell and looked up. A line of brush appeared straight ahead, 20 yards away. Beyond it, the base of the rim rock.
Can't be more than a mile.
He climbed to his feet and ran through the brush, the branches whipping his legs. Behind him, the riders closed.
Get the son of a bitch! Blow his
head off! Yakima lifted his head and closed his eyes, pumping his legs and arms.
Whoa! Hold on, boys!
Yakima could no longer hear his pursuers, but his stride didn't slow. His boots stopped thudding. The ground disappeared.
What a bloody goddamn mess!
Bill Thornton and Avery Sykes, one of his bartenders, hauled the fourth and last carcass slowly down the stairs.
He sure is.
Avery Sykes was a square-headed gent with massive tattooed forearms and thick red hair and mustache. Like Thornton, Sykes was nearly covered in blood from all the bodies he and Thornton and the other bartender and hostlers had hauled out of the roadhouse.
It's the worst I ever seen!
I've worked in saloons from Tucson to Fort Dodge, but I can't say as I've ever seen a fracas like this one here.
The two men came upon a step with some pooled blood on it.
Shut up!
Damn it!
I don't want to hear about it. When I get my hands on that half-breed son of a bitch, he's gonna rue the day he ever set eyes on this place. Out of the goodness of my heart, I gave that dog-eater a job, and this is the thanks I get.
Thornton cast a glance over the stair rail. The saloon's main hall looked as though a pie-eyed waddy had gone through on a bucking bronc, triggering a brace of six-shooters. Thornton and the others had hauled out most of the broken tables and chairs before they'd removed the bodies. Now, where 3/4 of the furniture had stood, blood was pooled, lakes of it. The room was littered with broken glass, playing cards, coins, paper money, bottles, shot glasses, and beer schooners. Not long after the dust had settled, half the bullwhackers, saddle tramps, and drummers who'd helped destroy the place had lit a shuck, while 6 men with saddle horses, drovers from the nearby Roberts Basin Ranch, the bounty hunter Whit Bardool and Thornton's 2 hostlers had gone after the breed.
Yakima saved my life, Bill.
The blonde whore, Faith, peered at Thornton over the rim of her soapy water bucket. She and the other whores were scrubbing and mopping up the blood pools, their clothes disheveled, their hair in their eyes, injured expressions on their faces.
If it wasn't for him, I'd likely have been butchered.
Oh, they weren't gonna kill you.
Thornton cast a nervous glance at the other girls as he and Sykes crossed the main hall, weaving around the whores and the blood pools as they headed toward the tied-open batwing doors.
They were just gonna steal a few pokes, that's all. I'd have sent Willie after them later.
They were gonna kill me. I could tell by the looks in their eyes. They were gonna cut my heart out and leave it for you in my washbowl.
The girl always was a little on the hysterical side.
1, 2, 3.
Thornton tried to cover his chagrin as he and Sykes swung the dead man onto the wagon parked before the stoop. He hadn't convinced himself, however. The possibility of someone killing his best whore to spite him made his jaws lock in anger. He knew that he should have had Willie keep a closer eye on the stairs. 6 bodies already graced the wagon's bloody box. They were stacked like cordwood, the sightless, staring eyes, belt buckles, and spurs glistening in the light.
A little loopy, Faith is, but she makes more money on a weekend than all the other girls put together.
Something about her makes men turn to sugar.
Thornton turned his head toward the sound, watching as three figures rode into the roadhouse yard. He turned back to see Faith move to the edge of the porch, clutching a light wrapper around her shoulders as she cast her expectant gaze at the riders. The bounty hunter, Whit Bardool, checked his buckskin down a few yards to the right of the wagon. Thornton's two hostlers, Ace Higgins and Roy Brindley, burly farmhands from Iowa who'd given up prospecting last year when they'd been burned by two bad mountain winters, did likewise. All three were breathing hard and sweating atop their lathered horses. As Bardool's buckskin dipped its muzzle into the stock trough between the hitch rack and the stoop, the tall, snaggle-toothed bounty hunter poked his battered sombrero off his forehead.
He's dead.
You kill him?
He killed himself.
Fell into Bear Creek. This time of year, that creek don't hold more than 2 feet of water, and he fell into the gorge below Snake Butte.
Pace Higgins patted the old cap and ball pistol he wore and a soft leather holster on his right thigh.
I winged him first, though.
That was a lucky shot, you stupid Granger. Probably a ricochet.
Where's the other riders?
Bardool dismounted and tossed his reins to Higgins.
After we seen that breed get sucked down the gorge, they went back to the ranch. Stay with my horses, will you, boys? I'm gonna get me some shut-eye, then light a shuck at first light.
Bardool mounted the porch and smiled down at Faith.
How about I get a free poke for my effort, Thornton?
Faith had been staring westward. Now she turned to the bounty hunter, making a face as though she smelled something rotten.
I've taken my shingle down for the evening, Mr. Bardool. Maybe next time you're passing through.
She turned toward the saloon, but kept her angry, defiant eyes locked on the bounty hunter for an extra second as she walked inside.
Bet you'd turn your shingle off of that breed.
Thornton whipped his head around toward the man.
Shut up, Bardool. Don't go starting rumors sullying my girl's reputations.
Rumors? Hell, I thought it was common knowledge your purtiest whore's been making time with that half-breed. I can tell by that look on her face it's true, too.
Bardool disappeared inside. Thornton stared at the door. His mouth was open as if he were about to speak, but he said nothing. He felt as though he'd been slapped.
Faith was diddling the breed?
Fury grew in Thornton like a rat gnawing at his guts. He had never really acknowledged it to himself, but he was in love with Faith, and had been ever since he'd bought her from that well-heeled pimp Ivan Platt in Cheyenne. There was something about her intelligent, bemused eyes and regal way she carried herself, her porcelain, pale, sumptuous body. She had an aloof air about her, as if she were just going through the motions of not only whoring, but living. As if she were just biding time till her real life, her true, noble calling, suddenly swept her away. A mysterious, beguiling creature, for sure. That she was a whore, and a damn good one, didn't lessen her attraction. Those were business transactions. Thornton made good money off of Faith, more than he'd made off of any other whore in his 13-year career. In a way, he saw himself and Faith as co-conspirators, even more than business partners. Their arrangement was their joke, and everyone else was being duped. But the fact, or the rumor, that she'd been sleeping with the half-breed for free, and that Thornton himself had been duped, was something he couldn't get his mind around. His face burned with betrayal, and the rat in his guts was working its way up toward his throat. The sound of hoofbeats jolted him out of his reverie. His heart pounding insistently, he turned toward the yard as Ace Higgins rained his steel dust toward the barn and corrals, jerking Bardool's and Brindley's horses along behind. Brindley himself had climbed atop the wagon.
I'll take these carcasses out behind the barn, boss.
Thornton glowered at the backs of both men.
Haul those stinking stiffs out the first thing in the morning. Anybody wants them, they can go wrestle them away from the coyotes.
Brindley raised a hand as the darkness on the other side of the yard consumed him.
And while you're out there, look around for that breed. I want to be certain sure that bastard's dead before I call the dogs off for good.
You bet, Mr. Thornton.
First light, boss.
Thornton turned back to the saloon, finding himself alone. He raked a hand through his sweat-soaked mustache and goatee, mounted the stoop, untied the batwing doors, and let him swing behind them as he went inside. Five of his six girls were still scrubbing at the bloodstain with mops and rags, while Sykes swept glass to Thornton's left near one of the wood stoves. Faith must have gone upstairs. The other bartender, Devlin McNair, a dandy with thin, pomaded hair and a carefully trimmed beard, was picking unbroken bottles out of the mess atop the back bar and stacking them on shelves before the bullet-shattered mirror. Thornton felt that they were sneering at him. Maybe not outwardly, but they were all sneering, mocking him. Bunching his fists at his thighs but trying to keep a lid on his anger, Thornton strode wide of a long mare's tail of blood and brains on the floor and planted an elbow on the bar.
Give me a bottle, Mac.
The thin-faced barman turned from the mirror, his pale features flushed, thin lips stretched from his teeth in a wince.
How long was Faith Dillon the Breed? And why in the hell am I the last one to know?
McNair grabbed a bottle off the back bar and the wince became a smile of sorts.
Good luck, boss. Found a couple that didn't get chopped to pieces.
Thornton grabbed the bottle and headed for the stairs. He stopped beside Kansas Jen, whose red blonde hair hung down both sides of her face, covering her freckled cheeks. Her flannel housecoat and bare feet were blood splattered, as were her hands, grinding the brush against the stained puncheons.
Jen!
Yes, Mr. Thornton.
The girl jerked her head up to peer at Thornton through her hair. The other girls snapped enervated looks at him. Thornton stared down, stone-faced, at Kansas Jen. He moved his right shoe ahead and to the right.
Missed a spot.
Oh, for goodness sake, Mr. Thornton.
Thornton, feeling as though he'd retrieved some of his former authority, clutched his whiskey bottle by the neck and mounted the stairs. Now he'd fetch back the rest of his authority from Faith. Thornton moved down the hall to room 9, Faith's room. He tried to calm himself and put his anger on a short leash. Placed a hand on the doorknob. He tried turning it.
Faith?
He waited. On the other side of the door, silence. The odd thing about Faith was that she'd somehow managed to draw invisible boundaries for herself. No small feat with Thornton, who treated his employees little better than slaves. But when Faith's door was locked, Thornton found himself respecting her wishes. He rationalized his acquiescence by reminding himself that she was his most valuable whore. Actually, it probably wouldn't have mattered had she earned next to nothing. Faith was inexplicably different from the other girls, and Thornton was under her spell. The difference couldn't be attributed to her beauty alone. And now, with a tooth-grinding amalgam of fury and chagrin, the roadhouse proprietor removed his hand from her doorknob and ambled away. Better to confront her in the morning anyway, when the passions of the evening had dissipated and he could think through the situation with a clear head. If she really had slept with the Breed, he'd have to figure out a creative way to punish her. Thornton turned left down the branching hall and stopped at his own door. He stumbled into his large bedroom and office and took another pull from the bottle.
God damn it!
When the door opened again, yellow morning light angled through the dust-streaked window at the east end of the hall. Thornton stood in the doorway, feeling a little wobbly, his buzzard-like physique clad in sweat-stained long underwear and a faded red robe hanging open to reveal a bulbous paunch below a hollow, bony chest. His hair and goatee were mussed, his eyes red, rheumy. On the dresser on the far side of the room, the whiskey bottle stood empty beside an ashtray overflowing with slender black cigar butts. A water glass lay broken on the floor beneath it. Against the right wall, his broad bed was a mess of strewn and twisted covers. Thornton looked down the hall to his left.
That lousy bitch betrayed me.
He slipped his hand into the deep right pocket of his robe and walked down the hall to room 9. On the floor before him, Faith knelt over a bloodstain, a scrub brush in her hand, a tub of soapy water to her right. She wore a flowered lime-yellow wrapper over a corset and pantaloons. She was barefoot. She frowned up at him, blinking against the blonde bangs in her eyes, her straw-colored hair pulled into a loose braid behind her head. Her cheeks were puffy and red, her eyelids pink, as though she'd spent a restless night herself.
Bill, what
did you diddle that dog eater?
What?
Answer me, did you?
What are you talking about?
You heard me, bitch. Did you diddle the breed?
The girl's eyes flashed like steel. She rose slowly and faced him.
What if I did?
Thornton stepped toward her, removing his right hand from his pocket. His fingers clasped an open, bone-handled razor. Light from the window behind her flashed across the blade.
What if you did? What if you did? Come here, bitch. I'm taking you downstairs. Gonna show the others what I do to cheating whores.
Get away from me, Bill. You're drunk.
I said come downstairs, bitch, or I'll cut you right here.
Thornton bolted toward her. His left foot slipped in the blood and water, and he fell back against the dresser.
Oh, damn you!
You're crazy drunk, Bill. I didn't sleep with Yakima. I don't know what you're talking about. Now get out of my room.
Giving it to that dog eater for free, were you? Or maybe you were just keeping whatever he paid you all for yourself.
Spittle flew from Thornton's swollen lips. He crouched before her like an attack dog.
I gave you extra room here. I gave you privileges. And this is how you pay me back?
What privileges? I'm a slave here like all the others.
Come here!
Faith wheeled toward the door. Thornton grabbed her arm and threw her back against the wall. The back of his hand hit her face, the knuckles smashing the girl's mouth.
God damn you, Bill!
Faith dropped to her knees. Thornton grabbed a handful of her hair and jerked her head back and up. He pushed his face down close to hers, his eyes wide with animal fury. He lifted his right hand. The blade of the razor winked in the window light.
This is what we do to cheating whores in these parts, Faith. See how you like this.
He shoved the razor toward her mouth, carefully lining up the blade for a clean slice across her upper lip.
No!
Faith jerked away. Thornton's wet left foot slipped. He half turned and fell, piling up against the base of the wall, still clutching the razor.
God damn!
Faith scrambled to her right, gained her feet, and leapt Thornton's outstretched legs on her way to the door.
Where you going, you mangy bitch?
She lay there on the floor for a moment, dazed. Thornton got his legs beneath him. Glancing up, he saw two of the other girls poking their heads around the doorframe, Nettie and Kansas Jen.
Ladies!
Oh my God, Mr. Thornton!
You girls got here just in time to see what happens to cheating whores.
He staggered toward Faith, stretched belly down on the floor to the left of the bloodstain.
Demonstration time, girl.
Out of the corner of his eye, Thornton saw several other faces hovering behind Nettie and Jen. He held the razor up for the others to see.
Sharpened just this morning.
He flicked his thumb across the blade.
And it is indeed sharp.
Shit, if you cut her face, Bill, she'll never work again.
Give that girl a cigar.
He dropped to his knees beside Faith. He tried to grab the back of her neck with his right hand. She suddenly turned over of her own accord, rising onto her butt. Thornton arched his right brow and his pulse quickened. Faith's eyes were slitted and her lips were pursed. He looked down. Her right hand was wrapped around the pearl grips of a silver-plated derringer.
Demonstration time, you pig.
Now just hold
on!
Smoke wafted around Faith's fist, the tang of cordite instantly assaulting Thornton's nostrils. He wasn't sure if it was the smell that nauseated him or the sudden cold burn in his right side. He looked down. There was a small, ragged hole in the left flap of his robe. He jerked the flap away.
Shit!
His heart thudded when he saw the blood oozing from a matching hole in his undershirt. Faith calmly but quickly removed the derringer's spent shell and replaced it with a fresh one from a small box on her night table.
Bitch shot me! God damn it! She shot me right in the side! Oh, shit!
Faith flicked the derringer closed and aimed it in the direction of the girls filling the doorway.
Any of you have a quarrel with what I just did?
No, Faith, no.
They lurched back as a group, all eyes flicking to the derringer's silver barrel. Claire looked at Thornton on the floor, clutching his bloody side.
You best light a chuck, Faith.
Claire's brown eyes snapped wide.
That'll be Willie and the hostlers!
Kansas Jen stared down at Thornton, her features stiff with shock.
Is he gonna die?
Oh, I just took a little chunk out of the bastard's hide.
Faith moved back into her room, opened a wardrobe, and hastily started shoving clothes into a carpet bag.
When do you want to stop gawking and shove a rag into the bullet hole? He'll be all right. But do it after I'm long gone from here.
She shot him. She shot Mr. Thornton.
We know that! Shut up! Carmilla, Nettie, don't just stand there. Tend the man.
I'm gonna kill you, bitch. I'm gonna gut you like a fish and hang you from the barn eaves. Willie! Willie!
Faith aimed the derringer at him.
Shut up, Bill. If you don't, I'll drill the next one through your eye.
Thornton's gaze flicked to the derringer, and he closed his mouth. As Carmilla and Nettie edged toward him, frightened of the man and repelled by the blood, Faith turned back to the wardrobe. Reaching inside, she scooped up a hide sack filled with coins and dropped it into her carpet bag.
Mr. Thornton?
Claire squeezed Faith's arm.
Will you go, please?
Faith threw a last pair of underwear and a frayed leather hat into the carpet bag, stepped into shoes without bothering to lace them, and turned toward Thornton.
Mr. Thornton!
Faith, go! Avery's coming! Take the back stairs. I'll stall him. No, they'll blame you later. Stay here.
Faith kept her derringer aimed at Thornton as she moved to the door and peered left. Clutching the carpet bag in one hand, pistol in the other, Faith bolted out of the room and turned right along the hall.
Good luck!